Chapter 33. Next, Daylight surmised that he might be touched with religion, but, quest about as he would, in a conversation covering the most divergent topics, he could find no hint of queerness or unusualness. So it was, when between them, they had washed, and wiped the dishes, and put them away, and had settled down to a comfortable smoke, that Daylight put his question. "Look here, Ferguson. Ever since we got together, I've been casting about to find out what's wrong with you, to locate a screw loose somewhere, but I'll be danged if I've succeeded. What are you doing here, anyway? What made you come here? What were you doing for a living before you came here? Go ahead and elucidate yourself." Ferguson frankly showed his pleasure at the questions. "First of all," he began, "the doctors wound up by losing all hope for me. Gave me a few months at best, and that, after a course in sanatoriums and a trip to Europe and another to Hawaii. They tried electricity, and forced feeding, and fasting. I was a graduate of about everything in the curriculum. They kept me poor with their bills, while I went from bad to worse. The trouble with me was twofold. First, I was a born weakling. And next, I was living unnaturally too much work, and responsibility, and strain. I was managing editor of the Times Tribune," Daylight gasped mentally, for the Times Tribune was the biggest and most influential paper in San Francisco, and always had been so. "And I wasn't strong enough for the strain. Of course my body went back on me, and my mind too, for that matter. It had to be bolstered up with whiskey, which wasn't good for it anymore, than was the living in clubs and hotels good for my stomach and the rest of me. That was what ailed me. I was living all wrong." He shrugged his shoulders, and drew at his pipe. "When the doctors gave me up, I wound up my affairs, and gave the doctors up. That was 15 years ago. I'd been hunting through here, when I was a boy, on vacations from college, and when I was all down and out it seemed a yearning came to me to go back to the country. So I quit everything, absolutely, and came to live in the Valley of the Moon, that's the Indian name, you know, for Sonoma Valley. I lived in the lean-to the first year, then I built the cabin and sent for my books. I never knew what happiness was before, nor health. Look at me now, and dare to tell me that I look 47. I wouldn't give a day over 40, Daylight confessed. "Yet the day I came here I looked nearer 60, and that was 15 years ago." They talked along, and Daylight looked at the world from new angles. Here was a man, neither bitter nor cynical, who laughed at the city dwellers, and called them lunatics. A man who did not care for money, and in whom the lust for power had long since died. As for the friendship of the city dwellers, his host spoke in no uncertain terms. What did they do, all the chaps I knew, the chaps in the clubs with whom I'd been cheek by jowl for heaven knows how long? I was not beholden to them for anything, and when I slipped out there was not one of them to drop me a line and say, "How are you, old man? Anything I can do for you?" Apostrophe for several weeks it was. What's become of Ferguson? After that I became a reminiscence and a memory. Yet every last one of them knew I had nothing but my salary, and that I'd always lived a lap ahead of it. "But what do you do now?" was Daylight's query. "Who must need cash to buy clothes and magazines? A week's work or a month's work, now and again. Plowing in the winter, or picking grapes in the fall, and there's always odd jobs with the farmers through the summer. I don't need much, so I don't have to work much. Most of my time I spend fooling around the place. I could do hack work for the magazines and newspapers, but I prefer the plowing and the grape picking. Just look at me, and you can see why. I'm hard as rocks, and I like the work. But I tell you a chap's got to break into it. It's a great thing when he's learned to pick grapes a whole long day and come home at the end of it with that tired happy feeling instead of being in a state of physical collapse. That fireplace, those big stones, I was soft then, a little anemic alcoholic degenerate, with the spunk of a rabbit, and about 1% as much stamina, and some of those big stones nearly broke my back and my heart. But I persevered, and used my body in the way nature intended it should be used, not bending over a desk and swilling whiskey. And, well, here I am, a better man, for it, and there's the fireplace, fine and dandy, eh? And now tell me about the Klondike, and how you turned San Francisco upside down with that last raid of yours. You're a bonny fighter, you know, and you touch my imagination, though my cooler reason tells me that you are a lunatic like the rest. The lust for power. It's a dreadful affliction. Why didn't you stay in your Klondike? Or why don't you clear out and live a natural life, for instance, like mine? You see, I can ask questions too. Now you talk, and let me listen for a while. It was not until 10 o'clock that daylight parted from Ferguson. As he rode along through the starlight, the idea came to him of buying the ranch on the other side of the valley. There was no thought in his mind of ever intending to live on it. His game was in San Francisco. But he liked the ranch, and as soon as he got back to the office he would open up negotiations with Hillard. Besides, the ranch included the clay pit, and it would give him the whip hand over Holdsworthy if he ever tried to cut up any didos. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.